Welcome to the Reclaim Your Rise podcast. My name is Lauren Bongiorno, nationally board certified health coach and founder and CEO of Risely Health, where we help people and families impacted by type 1 diabetes take ownership over their lives so that they can transform with more freedom and confidence. Everyone has a different reason to be here. You might be seeking knowledge, support, or community, but at your core, I know that you long for something deeper. You're here for transformation. And that's what the Reclaim Your Rise podcast is all about.
You're going to hear, oh, you don't need glucagon because you're on this CGM that's going to solve your problem. Or, you know, you've got this new insulin that's going to solve your problem. That's like just not true. The education you're getting from the healthcare community doesn't say properly position the right use of glucagon in a rescue situation. So you don't have a population that believes they need it until it's too late most often.
A quick reminder before we start the show that nothing you hear on the Reclaim Your Rise podcast should be a substitute for personalized professional medical advice. Please always consult your physician or other medical professional before making any changes to your diet, insulin dosages, or healthcare plan. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today's guest is Mr. Paul Edick, Chairman and Chief Executive Officer of Xeris Pharmaceuticals, the makers of Gvoke, which, if you don't know, is the FDA-approved, ready-to-use rescue pen for very low blood sugar in people with diabetes ages 2 and above. Now, I'm really excited for you to hear this episode for a few reasons. First, Paul is an incredible CEO, yes, but he's also really down to earth and easy to talk to. Right before we started recording, we were actually bonding over soccer because he used to play and he had two jerseys framed hanging on his wall behind him, one being Mia Hamm. So we love that. But secondly, a big part of what we talk about today is going to be helpful for you if you have a fear of low blood sugar or if you don't have any confidence in yourself or your loved ones to give you that old school glucagon syringe that's been sitting in your fridge for years. I know some of you know what I'm talking about. I am raising my hand right now because I'm also guilty of that. But whether this is your first time listening or you're a fan of the Reclaim Your Rise show and listen regularly, one thing to know is that around here, we love to celebrate and amplify innovation in the diabetes space. And that's truly exactly what Xeris and Gvoke have done with this product. So without further ado, help me welcome today's guest, Paul Edick, and let's rise. Paul, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here with me today.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Really excited to have you. This is a conversation that is going to be centered a lot around hypoglycemia and what we can do to be proactive about it. I think a lot of the conversation generally in the community is around high blood sugar and the complications that can come and wanting to prevent complications and fear of that. But we're going to be talking a lot about low blood sugar today and especially what Xeris is doing with Gvoke. Really excited. So, you know, before we get into the details, if you could just share with us a little bit of background about you and your journey to becoming CEO of Xeris, that would be great.
So I was the CEO of a couple of companies and I had actually retired. Some of the funds that were investing in Xeris at the time were concerned with the trajectory of the company because they had a failed stability study. They asked me to take a look at the company and I ended up agreeing to join and kind of reboot in January of 17.
Okay. And so when you came on, I mean, what excited you about it that it brought you back into for really, you know, starting to build a company like this?
Got me out of retirement. Yeah. I'm wondering these days, but no, it's one of those things where the company was at a crossroads and I met with the CSO, the founding scientist, Steve Przestrzelski. The underlying technologies in the company, both the Xerisol, which is used in glucagon, and the Xeriject technology, were fascinating. It was simple science, but truly elegant. They had already figured out the root cause of the issue that they had. It was a matter of changing kind of our approach, you know, rethinking the strategy for the company and getting the investors calm and able to support the company the way that we needed.
And since you came on, give us a little bit of context into growth of Xeris.
Yeah. So the company was 10 or 12 people in a small lab in Austin, Texas. We are with a product that was at the end of phase two. So not even in the clinic yet for registration trials. and underfunded at the time. Today, we have been a public entity for 3-4 years. We have three growing commercial assets. In addition to Gvoke, we have two other products. We're generating $150 to $165 million in revenue. We're going to be cash flow break even in the fourth quarter. And we're now over 300 people, maybe close to 400 people all over the country, with a couple hundred in brand new laboratory facilities in Chicago. So pretty miraculous, relatively speaking, in a matter of 6 years.
Miraculous, and also, I imagine, took a lot of hard work and strategy and a great team. I know some of your team, I've had the pleasure of working with them on some of the partnership initiatives, and really, really, really strong. So you have three products, it sounds like, in addition, two others in addition to Gvoke. I want to talk mostly about Gvoke today, but before we talk about that, I would love for you to share just generally what glucagon is, because I think that when a lot of us are diagnosed, I was diagnosed at 7, there was this, hey, if anything happens, handed it to my parents, here is this red container that you're going to keep in your fridge, and you're going to mix this whole potion together, and then you're going to administer it before, you know, if she's having a low blood sugar or is, you know, having a seizure, whatever it is. And it's not really explained, I think, the science behind what's happening that a lot of people don't understand. So when you're administering the glucagon into your body, like, what is it actually doing? Can you explain that? Because it's not just straight sugar.
Well, I mean, in terms that I understand, not being the scientist in the group, stimulating the production of glucagon, one of the, you know, two hormones that are regulating, insulin in the blood. So you've got insulin and you've got glucagon. The Gvoke is, and the kit you're referencing, is more of a rescue dose when you're not producing enough or you're overused insulin and you've got low blood sugar that, you know, is going into a range that would be called life-threatening or severe. So you have the products we're talking about are an external administration of what is naturally in your body and to begin with to regulate glucose.
Right. And what I find really fascinating is I think a lot of people think that that is only to be used when they are like completely passed out and somebody else has to administer it for them. Because it's this fear that, well, if I'm, 40, I don't want to have to take this because then I'm going to shoot up to, 300. And that, I think, is the thought process that maybe prevents people from using it as much as maybe, they could be using it. So what you want to speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, that's I won't say fairy tale, but it's the myth of glucagon. It's a fascinating hormone at the end of the day. It sort of turns itself on and turns itself off, self-regulating hormone that you don't end up with the wide, swings. And I don't know where the wait until you're passed out came from. I don't understand that. I don't understand the medical aspect of that, but somehow that ended up being the way physicians use it. And that's even, kind of the way the label was at the time. At the end of the day, do you want to wait till you're passed out, rely on somebody else to administer that? They're not going to know how to do that kit any better than you do. Just the first thing that you said, which is a myth, is it keep it in your refrigerator. Why did doctors or healthcare professionals tell you to keep that kit of dry powder in the refrigerator? It doesn't need to be refrigerated. When you reconstitute that kit, it's going to degrade in a short period of time anyway. Refrigerating it doesn't really help. So, 70% of the time in test subjects, either trained or untrained, people deliver the wrong dose with that kit anyway. So it's an outmoded method of administration. I mean, even Lilly discontinued theirs.
So it's outmoded, it's outdated. Why did it take so long to innovate it?
Yeah, so that's hard. It's hard to tell. If you think about it, is for decades, companies with insulin have been trying to build a better insulin so that you would have less severe, hypoglycemia. That just has not been the case. The rates of hypoglycemia and severe hypoglycemia have not really changed, materially in decades. Also, there wasn't great incentive if you're selling insulin to innovate the rescue product for when insulin is causing a problem. I mean, if you think about it, being a diabetic, you're at risk for a severe low. Add in insulin, you're at increased risk for a severe low. So, you know, there's 15 million people, either insulin or sulfonylureas. If you're on insulin or a sulfonylurea, you're at increased risk for a severe low because you're managing down glucose with those products.
Do you happen to know any statistics? I don't want to put you on the spot, but like even just like an average around, you know, what those number of cases are per year of people with diabetes who are having, you know, ending up in the ER with episodes of hypoglycemia or like anything just to give us like an idea?
So in the COVID years, there really wasn't data being kept because of, you know, the way the hospitals were being managed. But, you know, historically, the best data we've been able to find is, and I'll come at it in two ways. Anywhere from 250 to 300,000 people show up at the emergency room annually, neighborhood of 25,000 deaths annually. That's the best data we've been able to find. And that's when you assume the people who show up at the emergency room are coded as severe hypoglycemia. They might be coded with fainting spells or, right, you know, loss of cognitive function or whatever. So you're not capturing all of them anyway. The other way people look at that question is they, you know, if you're a type 1 or a type 2, how often do you end up having a severe low? On average, type 1's one or two times a year. On average, type 2, it's maybe one time a year. But you could go, you know, and a lot of type 1's will tell you, they go for 10 years, never have a severe low. I don't need glucagon is the way a lot of people think about it. And oh, by the way, all those myths that we talked about before, I'm afraid of glucagon. When in actuality, it should be your best friend. And, you know, you can go 10 years and not have a severe low, but then one day, something is not quite right with your diet or exercise, or you're, you know, you don't have any food, you're caught in a traffic jam, you end up in the emergency room. So
I'll tell you, I've only had to use glucagon one time in 23 years, and it was not from a severe low. I mean, and let's just pause there. What is considered a severe low? Is there a range of blood sugar?
In the clinical trials, the FDA says it's, I think it changed, but it's around 50-54 milligrams per milliliter.
Wow. Like I think in my head, the way I would think about a severe low, I would say 40 or below would be my marker.
Yeah. Well, but this is clinical trials and what you're required to. So the way the clinical trials work is you actually induce a severe hypoglycemia. You take people down by administering insulin to where they are severe. Once you cross that 50, you know, a lot of people drop very quickly from there. So you can go from 50 to 30 in minutes.
Right.
But anyway, we induce it and then we rescue them at a certain point and it comes back up. Most people usually get back up to 60 or 70 in, you know, 10, 12 minutes.
I was going to ask that. And first I'll just share really quickly to finish that loop. So I had to take it once. I was in college. I was a freshman in college and I just was irresponsible in terms of my mini fridge in my room was not stocked with juice. I had run out. It was like the middle of the night and I was like, oh my gosh, like I have this glucagon. Like, thank God I had this glucagon. So I was probably like 45 and took it. And I remember going up to 220 and thinking, oh wow, that I didn't go up as I came up pretty quickly, but I didn't like skyrocket to the other side. So it's the only time I've had to use it. If I had orange juice, I would have chose or any kind of, you know, tablets or things, I would have chose to do that instead. But I was, yeah.
Yeah. But that's, you know, that, but still after all that time and you're getting really good at managing your diabetes, it still happened.
Of course.
So it would argue that anyone who is on insulin or sulfonylurea should have a rescue device, a rescue glucagon, ready to use glucagon, no matter what, just in case.
Absolutely. And you know what I also think? I don't know how you'd be able to track this, but I think that more education around Gvoke and around how to properly use glucagon, when to use it, so that people aren't afraid to use it and see it as an option, you know, a safety rescue option, it would also decrease the amount of DKAs and people who are having high blood sugars in and hospitalizations from it. And my logic behind this is because we at Risely, we coach, you know, hundreds of people with type one and also caregivers of kids with type one per year. And we see that the number one biggest challenge for people who are having higher numbers and low time in range is fear of lows, fear of hypoglycemia, and not understanding like I don't want to go anywhere near, you know, even just like 120, because that scares me, right? I feel safer at 200 because I don't trust myself that I would be able to handle saving myself and knowing what to do if I'm sleeping alone in my apartment and I don't have anybody here with me. So have you ever thought about that, or has your team talked through that?
Yeah. So if, I mean, the dramatic difference between where you were then in those old kits is you're alone. You've got to try to figure out how to mix this stuff, and you got to give yourself the right dose. And that's all very scary. And while your blood sugar is going down, you should use glucagon after you've tried all of the food options. We're after orange juice. We're after gummies. That makes all the sense in the world. That's good medicine. But at a certain point, instead of being afraid, your ability to either yourself or your, you know, loved one to give you a Gvoke. I mean, you pull off the red cap, you press down the yellow, and you wait 5 seconds. Pretty simple. And you can save your own life. Self-administration becomes an option. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you don't have to live in fear. You don't have to run your glucose so high that it's, you know, I'm not advocating it running low either. But the fear of going low is in some ways healthy, I guess, but to be inordinately fearful that you don't have an option, you can't rescue yourself or somebody can't rescue you. That's an educational uphill battle.
Right. And it's not so much the, we want everybody running low. We just, you know, studies show that the closer you are to sitting at that 110 to 120 range, you know, that time in range with lower variation in your blood sugars, like you are going to have better outcomes. You're going to feel better on a daily basis. Your energy is going to be better. And I think people fear even sitting lower than some, for some people, it could be extreme, lower than 200 or lower than 150, because they don't trust that once again, the arrows on their CGM are going to spin really quickly. And then they go into panic mode of, oh my gosh, I'm going to die. Right. And then if they can train their brain to think, wait, no, I'm not, I actually have tools that once I get to a certain point, I can bring myself back up from, and I can trust that tool, then I think that that could aid in their relationship to what a low blood sugar is. So question for you, Paul, when you said 10 to 12 minutes that you come up after taking it, and so that is combined with food, needs to be combined with food, or does it need to be combined with food? You can just take it on your own. How does it?
Well, that was in the clinical studies. They had to get back above 65 or 70. I don't recall exactly. They had to get back above 70 mg per mil and within a certain amount of time. And, you know, well within that time range, you know, in the low double digits of minutes. The problem is, I mean, if you talk to your average endocrinologist, even a primary care or internal medicine physician who's doing a lot of diabetes, you're going to hear, oh, you don't need glucagon because you're on this CGM that's going to solve your problem. Or, you know, you've got this new insulin that's going to solve your problem. You don't worry about it. You don't need. That's like just not true. The education you're getting from the healthcare community doesn't say properly position the right use of glucagon in a rescue situation. So you don't have a population that believes they need it until it's too late most often.
Is that the biggest barrier that Xeris has in getting Gvoke into more patients' hands? Is it more of a healthcare systemic issue in terms of like the operations behind how doctors are communicating it to every patient in a systemized way? Or is it more so patients not knowing that this is something that they should advocate for? Is it a combination of both?
It's both. You know, you've got decades of medical community not really properly positioning glucagon as part of therapy or part of, you know, managing your condition. And you have a population of, you know, type 1 and type 2 people with diabetes that don't understand the opportunity of, you know, a rescue or ready-to-use rescue glucagon. They don't understand how it works. Like you said, was not explained in a way that you really understood it and knew how to use it. It's both. You need a motivated community, and you need a healthcare community that is doing better education, more education.
So is there anything that, or is it out, is this not really like Xeris's place to be educating healthcare providers? Like, is that something separate that needs to start through like medical school? Like, I'm trying to figure out like where the breakage is in the path to getting it to the patient or communicating it to the patient.
Yeah, it is part of our role. I mean, you know, the role of the pharmaceutical enterprise is to meet patient needs. And part of that need is an educated healthcare community that is, you know, teaching patients properly, positioning different therapies, you know, correctly in their management of the condition. So, yeah, it's an important part of what we do. That's why it's such an uphill process. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got, even after what it's now 3 or 4 years, admittedly during a pandemic, 15 million people, depending on whose math you use, somewhere between 12 and 15 million people with type 1, type 2 that should have a rescue ready to use glucagon handy. Less than a million actually do. That's the most daunting statistic.
I would love to hear from more type ones, like even just to pull my audience and the RISE community and see like who has it. Like, I think the categories would be who has it versus who doesn't have it versus who has it and has no idea like how to use it and has like the old version and not the Gvoke. I'm so surprised that my doctor has not in many years. I know my glucagon prescription is outdated. I just looked before recording with you just to see out of curiosity. And it was like it says like 2018 on it. So even more than, you know, a few years, and has not even at my appointment said, hey, do you need an updated prescription? Nor has said, hey, there's this new product on the market in the past couple of years called Gvoke. Would you, you know, FDA approved now, would you be interested in trying that? It's a lot simpler.
Yeah, with the new ready-to-use products, and at the end of the day, if 10 million people had one of them, you know, either the Baqsimi or Gvoke, which are really the two, you know, 80% of the business right now, we don't care if get something, because that's the fundamental need. The educational process, letting patients know that you have these new options, because you're absolutely right, it's very typical. It's old. It's been sitting around. You know, those kits are, hopefully it's fewer and fewer people every day that have those kits and more people have the ready to use products.
Mm-hmm. I think this is a call to action to everybody with diabetes listening, or if you're a caregiver listening, to, there has to be a level of advocacy for ourselves, right? And to go into that appointment, I know my next endo appointment is coming up and I'm going to go in and say, hey, I would love a prescription for, you know, Gvoke, and I'll report back and what that process is like. I know it's, from what I've heard, very, very simple and easy. Is there anything that users can do like directly through Gvoke, or people with diabetes can use like directly through Gvoke, or do we need a prescription from our doctor?
Well, you need a prescription. It's a prescription medication. And you know, a patient asking for Gvoke should be a pretty simple process with a caregiver. I think on the caregiver side, you know, they see a million patients and they don't necessarily remember everything. What we're trying to do, and I think what patient advocates can do as well, is to encourage physician offices to have some kind of standardized procedure. So every patient who leaves with a prescription, or every patient that the physician has done the drop down and sent it to your pharmacy and on the computer for insulin or sulfonylurea, there should be a co-prescription of a ready-to-use rescue glucagon, such as Gvoke. Mm-hmm. That should be automatic. It should be like kind of like standing orders in doctor's offices. So you don't have to have, you know, you think about everything that they've got to, that you talk about with your physician. If you're on a pump, if you're on a CGM type of insulin, et cetera, you know, all the data from that, you know, and glucagon ends up being kind of at the end of the line and almost never talked about. If there's a systematic way to manage that everybody who's got an insulin prescription gets a Gvoke prescription, then you are going to have more people protected and you're going to have more conversation about it. You're going to have more education around it. Well, what is it? Why am I getting it? Right? Even at the pharmacy level, pharmacists that are dispensing insulin should be asking the question, do you have a ready-to-use glucagon prescription? Have you talked to your doctor about it?
Mm.
Right. That should be a normal part of the process.
And I feel like relatively you are, you know, only a few years Gvoke on the market. 2019 was when it was FDA approved, correct?
Correct.
So, I mean, I feel like you've done so much in such a short amount of time, and I'm excited for, you know, to see a marker in the next 5 years, 10 years, and hopefully see those numbers go up the more that, you know, Gvoke is just in front of more people with diabetes. So speaking about the community, you know, thinking back to, I want to say it was 2018, Paul, but I can't remember. Maybe it was 2017. I know you had a bunch of people, there was like 40 or 50 of us to Chicago, and you brought us all out there. There was a bunch of people in the online type 1 diabetes space, and you asked us like, hey, we're creating this product. We want to know what you think about it. And the idea, and, you know, asked us a bunch of questions and surveys and all of that and focus groups. And what was your hope and intention of doing that? And what did you get out of that?
It's a great question. That does take us back quite a ways. A lot of gray hair ago. The whole idea was, and it's like, well, we're a brand new company. We're going to be promoting something that nobody ever really promoted glucagon. Okay. The companies that had glucagon were the big insulin companies. They didn't want to talk about the downside of insulin, right? So nobody was ever out there doing education. Nobody was out there advocating for patients. Nobody was listening to patients. And who are we to know, you know, do we even know how to position this in your world? So we started doing market research, and we found that there was quite an active advocacy or influencer community in the world of patient people with diabetes. So, you know, the whole idea was, well, why don't we listen to a few of them to know how should we go about this? I remember distinctly being in the lobby of that hotel as people were arriving, and they were talking to each other saying, who is this? Who are these people? Is this a scam? Is this for real? But the other thing that was truly interesting is they all knew each other by their online persona. Almost none of them had actually ever physically met each other. So there was a bringing together of the influencer community by and large. And then there was an opportunity to listen and say, okay, what do you need? How do you see, you know, hypoglycemia? And we learned a lot of the same things. Hopefully we're fixing some of them as we go, but it informed our positioning of Gvoke first and Gvoke HypoPen, most importantly. That's the real beneficial product at the end of the day, and how we were going to talk about it. If you recall, we actually brought a bunch back a year later and said, or maybe 9 months later, and said, okay, we listened to you. Then we went out and did market research with healthcare professionals and patients. Here's where we are. This is what we're thinking. And we had a number of different concepts. What do you guys think? We got input on that, and that really informed how we started to talk about Gvoke, and especially Gvoke HypoPen.
Really, really, really smart. I don't know whose idea it was, and I'm sure the team was, I know, smaller back then, so it was probably everybody's collective contributions. But I mean, that also, I think, when Gvoke came out, got me excited personally, because I felt like I was part of the, you know, creation away or marketing efforts that you guys were putting together, where it just made me naturally want to be talking about it more. And I can't believe it took you this long to come on the podcast, because I was like, I kept being like, oh, I have to have Paul on. We got to talk about Gvoke. We have to talk about Gvoke. So I'm glad that we, you know, finally had the opportunity to do this. But, you know, I would love to just hear, what are things that you're looking forward to? Like, what are things on the horizon for 2024, beyond that, for Xeris, for yourself, and for, yeah, whatever comes to mind.
You know, we're on course as a company. You know, we have the technology, which we, you know, is one kind of pillar of our business. We have the ability to reformulate products like glucagon. We have a vibrant commercial business that is growing every single day, and we're partnering our technologies with other companies to help them build better drugs, subcutaneous drugs. So we're going to stay on that path. We're going to keep growing, you know, in every way. The most important thing is when you talk about Gvoke is we have to, what you and I have been talking about, you know, you're in a position where, believe it or not, you're going to save lives. okay? You're going to change how people approach their disease, their condition. That's the most important thing for us as well. It's like, you know, why do we want to get a rescue Gvoke ready-to-use product in the hands of somebody with diabetes? It's because it could potentially save their life, okay? And we're going to keep working on that until we crack the code, so to speak. You know, like I said, there's millions of people who are at increased risk of a severe low, and not even a million have a current prescription for a rescue like a Gvoke. So there's work to be done.
There's a lot of work to be done. And can you repeat that stat you shared earlier? I really want people to hear this. There's, I think it was, you could correct me if I'm wrong, 12 or 13 million people.
If you, yeah, depending on whose numbers you look at, because it's a moving target in this business, but.
We could use your numbers because you're here.
You know, anywhere, if you take people who are on insulin and sulfonylureas, somewhere between 12 and 15 million, depending on whose numbers you look at and how you do the calculations, right? Are just the fact that you're on insulin or a sulfonylurea puts you at increased risk of a severe low, period. They're in all of the guidelines, all of the professional associations, ADA, everybody is now saying that in their guidelines in one way or another, okay? Less than a million have a current prescription.
Less than a million.
Right. Compare that to somebody with, you know, the community of people with severe allergies. What percentage of them have an EpiPen?
Yep. Is it comparable? Does it look the same? Do you know?
They sell 8 million EpiPens or something like that are sold every year, I guess. The vast majority of people, talk to anybody who's got allergies, they'll tell you they have an EpiPen. And what they'll tell you is they have six of them and they put them in various places in their world. Mm-hmm. They go out of date and they buy six more, but they've got them just in case.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And they're not seeking out nuts or bee stings or whatever it is. It's the just in case, this is the rescue.
Right. So I have grandkids. I have a grandson who is highly allergic to peanuts. Mm. And I knew that. When he was, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4, sitting at a table, I'm eating peanuts and he's across the table from me sitting in a chair and he begins to get red. Hmm. It was in the air. And I'm like, wow. Holy mackerel. I didn't realize. But he whipped out his EpiPen and he was ready. And, you know, so we're hoping to get the community of people with diabetes to that same place. Mm. That it's like, you know what? I may never use this thing, but I've got my Gvoke just in case.
Well, listen, you have won me over. I am here to spread this like just as far wide as I can possibly, you know, with my audience and my reach. I want, like, personally to put a call to action out to everybody listening that next time you go to your endocrinologist, ask for a prescription for Gvoke. And then after you do, because we all know how much accountability can help for, you know, just us getting to the finish line of whatever the task or goal is, take a picture of it, post it on Instagram, tag me, tag Gvoke on Instagram, and we could just tally up the numbers over the next couple of months and see like just how many people are, you know, going from that less than a million to closer to that, like you said, Paul, 15 million, maybe, you know, over the next couple of years. And maybe we'll have you on the podcast and you can report back if the numbers have changed.
Yeah, that would be fun. That would be fun.
Amazing. Well, Paul, thank you so much for being here with me today. I know you're very busy. I so appreciate your conversation and your contribution to this community.
Well, I appreciate you doing it. I appreciate you having me and you know, talking about Gvoke. And I wish you all the luck in the world because, you know, you're in a position to change how people approach management of their condition. And that's important.
Thank you, Paul. That means a lot.
Thank you so much for being here with me today and listening to this episode of Reclaim Your Rise. To let us know that the episodes we're putting out are impactful and to help us get our street cred up and let everyone else know that this is something worthy of their time to listen to, please leave a rating and review on our Apple Podcast, send the show to other people impacted by T1D or maybe even your doctor, and share it on social media tagging at Risley Health and at Lauren_Bongiorno. New episodes of Reclaim Your Rise come out every single Tuesday, so make sure you are subscribed to the podcast so that you never miss a beat. Thanks again for listening, and as always, remember, diabetes is a challenge that we did not choose, but one that we can rise above.